second Love the Left Foot World Cup podcast. I'm your host, Simon Furnival, and again I have Sahail Sidat and Andrew Harding with me. Good evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
And we meant to record this after the group stage, but technical difficulties prevented us from doing so. So we are going to have a brief look back on the groups. And starting with Group A, I think that went much as everybody planned thoughts ahead, with Brazil looking the best team and Mexico and Croatia sort of fighting it out for second place.
Yeah, pretty much. We sort of said that in the preview as well. I thought Mexico impressed more so in their performance. I was surprised with Croatia's inability to really create. I thought they were quite disappointing in that sense. Cameroon did as what I expected, probably being the worst team in the tournament. In the whole tournament, they were just abject, really. And I think obviously their problem started from way back when they failed to board the plane and all that sort of stuff. So I think that continued. And I think Brazil have been unimpressive. And it was a good group. It was a bit tight, but I think the game of the group probably was Brazil Mexico. I thought that was quite interesting. Both on
even. Yeah, certainly good performance from Ochoa.
Yeah, definitely. And some very disappointing performances from the Brazilian team, and obviously got a lot of criticism, especially Fred. And he obviously sparked Alan Shearer to go on an absolute big rant about him, which caused Daniel Alves to call him an idiot, which is always great.
It is. Andrew, Brazil, certainly in the group stage, did flatter to deceive a bit. They weren't the maybe fluent attacking team that people had hoped they would be.
No, and they cost me money too, because I thought they were going to get free wins and a nice easy group win. They seemed to do enough. And they seemed, I mean, we spoke about the pressure beforehand, and some of the players, it's obviously gotten to them a bit, as we saw with the Chile game. So I think I was quite surprised at Brazil-Mexico as a game. I mean, that's what the only clean sheet Brazil have had in the tournament so far. I mean, even Cameroon scored past them. So you've got to look. I mean, Julio Cesar in goal is still, for me, an accident waiting to happen. And against Colombia next, that's going to be tested a lot. In terms of the rest of the group, I mean, I was pleased to get a prediction right with Mexico. I didn't think they would be that good. And going down to Croatia, Mexico, the last game, and it was very disappointing to see the gap in quality between the two teams. I expected more of Croatia, not in terms of a defensive sense, but as Sahail said earlier, in terms of an attacking creative sense. They seemed very, very limited.
Yeah.
And Cameroon, well, they're limited.
They certainly are, I think, in every sense. Moving on to Group B, I think, you know, we talked on the last podcast, Andrew, that the opening games of groups are quite often a bit sort of staid and a bit stodgy as teams sort of are desperate not to lose. Spain 1, Netherlands 5 was not that.
Yeah, that completely, I think, hit all of us. Yeah, it was especially after Mexico Cameroon, I think, the day before, I started to thought, oh, maybe we're going to get the slow pace of the tournament, and that really set the touch paper, I thought, in terms of the whole opening games being more open. To see Spain so roundly fast was amusing and enjoyable. Albeit I did predict them to win the group, but I predicted Chile to go through, and that's what I wanted, really. And for Spain to go out so early is great. Sorry to any Spanish listeners, so there are none, but it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Sahail, it was a surprise to see Spain so completely out of ideas almost throughout the group stage.
Yeah, but then I think if you sort of look back, I know hindsight's brilliant and all of that, it is an aging squad. It is an aging first team anyway. So is it really that surprising? I think what was surprising was the gap between the two teams in terms of the scoreline. The 4-goal difference is massive. And the fact that they were so rampant in the second half, Netherlands, they could have scored even more than that. And I think that was more surprising than anything. There was no midfield coordination, which Spain have built their success on for so many years. There was no control at all. And I think that was more saddening and surprising more than anything.
Yeah, and I mean, we should certainly talk about Chile a bit in this group as well. You know, they were a fantastic unit to watch, and I think particularly their defence, given that it consisted, you know, it had Gonzalo Jara, who's been released by Nottingham Forest, and Gary Medel, who's been playing out a position at Cardiff, who got relegated. You know, they were a defence that was more than the sum of their parts, perhaps.
Yeah, is it three centre-backs, the tallest being 5'10", the shortest being 5'6". It's not a defence built on strength and power. It's a defence built to feed the midfield, and it's all a well-oiled machine, I suppose, and that's how it worked. And, you know, it has its limitations, but Chile, we mentioned it, are an awkward team, and I think it worked, especially with the way that this group was so weirdly manufactured, and the way it went over the coming week. So it was interesting watching Chile, and thoroughly enjoyable as well.
And Andrew, I mean, Alexis Sanchez, whilst they were still in the tournament, was one of the stars of it, despite his ridiculous shorts.
Well, you got to give... I think he's... He was an excellent player before. Just the fact he got, how can I put it? I don't really want to talk about Barcelona too much. Hopefully he'll find a different club and become a bit more of a star. I mean, he showed in his performances. I mean, Vidal, who was supposed to, wasn't anywhere near fitness, and comes in, was fantastic. They just, in general, Chile, they were a team that instantly, I hate the term neutral, but a neutral. Would have instantly got behind them in terms of their energy and their work rate and their desire to. I mean, against Spain, the second game, I thought was fantastic, because there was not one point when Chile scored the opening goal that you thought Spain would equalise. It's a case of Chile could go on here and really thrash them. I was very impressed with Chile. It was a shame, in a way, that they had to have Brazil in the next round.
Yeah. Moving on to Group C, and we'll get to Andrew's chance to say I told you so in a minute, but Sahel, Colombia were just fantastic throughout this group, and you know, if Alexis Sanchez was one of the stars of the tournament, then James Rodriguez was the star of the tournament so far.
James Rodriguez, James Rodriguez, as Andy Townsend calls him. Fantastic. I think the second game in particular, I think the first game against Greece, people thought, oh yeah, James Rodriguez is quite good. In the second game against Ivory Coast in the second half, he was absolutely fantastic. When he was teaming with Quintero in the centre, I thought they were fantastic as a pairing. But yeah, he's been brilliant. He's shown a mixture of skills, his ability to shoot from long range, his ability to dictate from midfield, create opportunities for others. I think he's potentially the next big star after Ronaldo. I think he's got that ability about him, so it'll be interesting to see where he's already hoarding himself out to Real Madrid, and it's no surprise he's a client of Jorge Mendes, so that's how he was.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how his career goes, because he's not got a future really in Monaco. He's not going to really do a lot there, Yeah, we'll see where his future lies and how his career progresses.
Yeah, and Andrew, you told us that Greece would nick through with a late goal against the Ivory Coast, and that's exactly what panned out.
Yeah, I just... So when it came down to the last games, I thought... I was looking through the maths and thought, oh no. Because I didn't want to be right with it, but I was. I said the Ivorians were, in my opinion, disappointing in this tournament. Yaya Touré was back to being the old lummox that when he was in his Bever in Monaco days, where he looked like a player that could be something, but didn't quite hit it off. And Japan were, I thought, really poor. Mm-hmm. I was very disappointed with them. For a team that pride themselves on having a very good attacking verve, that seemed non-existent. And if you do that in a group comprising it, as you all said, a very impressive Colombia team, and Ivory Coast still have attacking talent, but just when you think they're going to do well, they won't. They have... It seems to be this... Ghana have got it as well, in terms of once you think they could do it, they seem to do it. Ah, guess what? I'm not going to. We're going to allow Greece, everyone's favourite team, to get out. I mean, in all fairness to the Greeks, they took the opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone that watched Japan, Greece, I felt sorry for. I luckily, that was the one game I missed in the group stage. I was quite pleased to have missed it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Greece, I mean, you know, I was very critical of them in the previous podcast, you know, about being defensive, and they weren't as defensive as I expected. They did sort of try to counter-attack a bit more. They still weren't particularly good to watch. I think they were more just really poor than really defensive. And I think it shows how bad Japan and the Ivory Coast were that Greece managed to get through that group, because they were by no means a good side.
I was just going to say, definitely in terms of with Group C, I thought the problem was with Colombia. I think it was it the last 16 game that was really shown Colombia in the groups. For me, it all seemed too easy. I mean, Ivory Coast obviously had its moments, but in the last game with Japan, when they beat them 4-1, you just thought, there's Colombia, then there's a massive gap, then there's your other teams.
Yeah, I think so. Moving on to Group D, where obviously
I was right.
Yeah, I think I had England going through with Italy, so I pulled that one right. But Costa Rica were a huge surprise to everyone, Sahil.
Yeah, I watched that first game against Uruguay, and they were shocking, Uruguay. So Costa Rica just blew them apart in the second half. Just simple patterns of play, really. They just get the ball in wide areas and just cut it across. And Uruguay seemed to now be able to deal with that, which is quite surprising. But I think, it was absolutely surprising, the fact that they managed to comfortably Italy. I think Italy was sort of a side that could pass the ball around Costa Rica. But I think a lot of credit goes to the Costa Rica manager for Pinto, for being able to change his tactics in both games. They were counter-attacking first game. Second game against Italy, they showed a bit more of their pressing ability. They caused a few problems. And I know Balotelli had the one chance where he lobbed it slightly wide from the goalkeeper. But other than that, Italy were fairly poor in that game, and a lot of credit goes to Costa Rica for that. They were the best of a bad group of teams, I think. This is, I think, the lowest scoring group from all the eight groups. I think there's an average of 14 goals per group. This one got 12, so I think that's it.
Yeah. And, you know, whilst you're saying, you know, obviously Pinto should take a lot of credit for what he's done with Costa Rica in this World Cup, on the flip side, do Prandelli and Hodgson have to take quite a lot of criticism for their side's underperformance?
Yeah, but I think Prandelli's obviously resigned from his role. Or offered his resignation. I don't know about the situation there. And Hodgson's managed to get away scot-free from the British press, or the English press anyway. And he has a lot to thank Luis Suarez for that, I think. I mean, it's absolutely shocking how he managed to get 1 point from nine points. Sorry. It's absolutely astounding. And the fact that he managed to get the Italy defeat spun as a victory is absolutely mesmerizing. And yeah, I think it's just another 2 years, I think, for England to watch more boring football. I think.
Andrew, what were your thoughts on this group? Uruguay didn't look like a particularly good side, but managed to come away with two victories.
Yeah, I think it was after the opening game, I think they were that shocked at the fact that Costa Rica actually were a football team. They didn't seem to recognise. It was really odd, the first 30 minutes in that game in particular. But Uruguay just seemed to go, oh, don't worry, you can have the ball a bit. We'll win this game eventually. And they brilliantly didn't. But in terms of the third game with Italy, I think, how can I put it? Italy seemed to have, after the win over England in the opening game, they seemed to almost lowered themselves in the second game. Again, thinking, now Costa Rica can't do it twice. And Costa Rica changed its sail, quite rightly said, changed it slightly again. And Italy just, I don't know, it seems to be that no matter what, they thought, nah, Costa Rica aren't going to do that, really. And then the last game, Costa Rica-England, was just absolutely shocking.
It was, I think.
And somehow Roy Hodgson afterwards says, I'm really glad that we gave the England fans something to go home with.
A 0-0 draw. Well, you know, they managed to stop the team who topped the group.
That's what he said.
Exactly, yeah, but it's still a case of, with the greatest respect to everyone in the group, and great respect to Costa Rica, it's still Costa Rica. This is the team that I mean, only before the World Cup started, only one team had further out odds of winning the competition.
And
they go
Iran.
And win a group.
Yeah, that was Iran.
Was it? I thought it was Honduras.
Oh. Either way, it was a surprise result. I mean, do we have any interest in discussing Luis Suarez and his proclivities at all?
I think he ended what was an absolutely shocking game. It was absolutely poor watching. You think one of these two teams actually wants to win it. I think Italy less so, but there was nothing created. I think Suarez had that one half chance with Buffon and hit it straight at him. And there was nothing else in it. And then he just bites Chiellini and then you say, oh, goodness.
I think he was genuinely bored after seeing Balotelli try and take one of his teammates' heads off in the first half. He was like, I've got to up this. I've got to try and out bad boy him. And I mean, it was one of those moments where you look at him and think, no, he didn't, no. Surely not.
Yeah, well, moving on to Group E and a chance for a little bit of an I told you so for me on this one, in that France looked quite impressive, particularly in the first sort of 80 minutes against Switzerland, and topped the group. Andrew, you know, they seem to be a huge difference from the France of the past few tournaments.
Yeah, they seem to be a team that actually works and communicates. When they do that, they're very, very, very good. And when they don't, well, we all know how bad they can be. They're very impressive in a group. I mean, again, I think a lot of people bigged up Ecuador after. I don't know why, but when they drew with England, everyone thought, oh, they could be a team
to
watch.
It's not that England are rubbish, it's that Ecuador are good all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. It's really bothered me with the World Cup in terms of a lot of England fans seem to have made out that England were very good to start with. I really don't know what they're basing that on. And we're going to get even more of that now with a ridiculously easy qualifying group in the Euros. But to return back to the group, in terms of Switzerland, France, I thought was a really good game. I was massively impressed with French in that match. The last game against Ecuador was one of those which is, well, they made a lot of changes and it was as disjointed as you'd expect.
Yeah, they just needed a point to win the group, and that was all they ever sort of came to get, really. Yeah. I mean, Sahel, the Swiss didn't get off to the most fluent of starts. You know, they needed an injury time winner to beat Ecuador. And you know, for much of the French game, were outplayed, but they seemed to come alive a bit in the final game against Honduras.
Yeah, the Swiss seems to sort of, in every tournament I've watched them in, play similar type of football, which is pretty solid at the back, besides the France game. And they sort of want to just get that goal, and then they'll be happy with it. And I think that game plan, especially with Hitzfeld in charge, sort of works. But then in a group where you're having to beat the likes of Honduras and Ecuador in order to guarantee qualification, I think they looked out of ideas, especially in the first game. And I think the run from Berami and Rodriguez sort of really propelled them and enabled them to get that winner. And I don't know whether it was deserved or not, that win against Ecuador. I thought Ecuador did enough to actually get the draw. So it's just those slight margins, I think, that favoured Switzerland. But yeah, as you said, it was the barnstorming victory against Honduras which made the difference at the end of it.
And Honduras themselves, I think, have to go down as the dirtiest team in this World Cup.
It's great, I thought. Well, you know, I when you get a defensive team like a Greece or whatever, you don't mind it if they're a bit cynical and a bit, you know, dirty, as you said. Honduras didn't really show any defence, didn't really show any attack. I mean, in all fairness against Ecuador, they had their moments, but it was Ecuador. I mean, in terms of what Sahel said about Switzerland, I think, in all fairness to Hitzfeld, when you're making a team defensively solid that's got Senderos and Giroud at the heart of it, that is mightily impressive. And a team as well that has virtually no strikers. It's just Shaqiri, and then there's someone else. They did really well. And Ricardo Rodriguez, for me, was excellent. And he deserved to be in a better team.
Yeah, well, I mean, moving on to Group F, and you know, one of the favourites for the tournament, Argentina, they did manage to win all three games, each by a one-goal margin, but they never really looked like they clicked into gear, Andrew. They relied a lot on Messi digging them out of holes.
Yeah, it was, well, for such an easy group, a lot of people were expecting, you know, cricket scorelines, and they really should have been. But they just... They seemed, in the Iran game, for example, they seemed slow. And it was, to see a team with that much ability in it be so slow is insulting, frankly. I mean, some people, well, to me. And they won, yeah, they won a group with total points, and they just scraped through the last 16. And people are making out as if they're going to win the whole thing. But despite this group being easy, I was delighted to see Nigeria go through. But I actually believe Bosnia deserved to go through after the farce of the Nigeria-Bosnia game.
Yeah, a lot of people wrote Nigeria off, myself included, and expected Bosnia to take second place fairly comfortably. And I have to say, well, it was a bit galling to see a squad containing Shola Ramiobi get through to the knockout stages of the World Cup. But Sahel, you know, they just about did enough to get through.
Yeah, they looked impressive in patches. I thought the game against Bosnia was quite good to watch, in parts. I thought in the first half, Emenike absolutely tore the Bosnian defence apart. It was just pace, and it was just old-fashioned football, really. They just pumped the ball into the channels, and then he just chased it, and it was effective, and it worked for Nigeria. And I think they sort of realised that's what they need to do with Odum Wingi on one side, and they brought in Moses in the last game, was it? And I think that was the idea, was just to try and put more pace and power in that team and get that team just all enough to actually be able to win, because you can't rely on the Nigerian defence. I felt it was a bit all over the place, even against Bosnia. I thought Dzeko should have scored a couple of goals himself. He had one disallowed. So I thought Nigeria just sneaked it. And as Andrew said, they were good to watch, and I was quite pleased to see them go through.
Yeah, Andrew, coming on to Group G, and one of your favourite teams who, in the end, disappointed. I suppose they've only got themselves to blame for that, having not taken anything from the USA game, and that's Ghana.
Yeah, I mean, it was after the first game, you thought, this is really up against it. And then the game against Germany, they were excellent. And when they went 2-1 up, they almost did that, the old-fashioned African thing of being naive and allowing a team back into a game. They could have closed that out and could have beaten Germany, and that really would have thrown everything up. And they even started a chance against Portugal. John Boy with a tremendous own goal, which never does well when you're pictured kissing cash before the start of a game. And obviously, we all know what the cash was. And yet again, I've just noticed today that Ghana are officially now going to have pre-World Cup contracts, so they'll get paid before the tournament starts, what every other country has. And African countries seem to somehow avoid it, and it just causes so many problems. And they've still not learned that. It was such a shame. I mean, the game against USA, I thought Ghana deserved to win. That's me being biased, of course. And the most disappointing thing, actually, in the group for me was Portugal.
Yeah, I think there was a few moments throughout the group where I think Ronaldo just seemed to realise the mess that was surrounding him and the team, because they were horrific throughout.
I think the problem for him was he turned around and he'd see Raul Morales. And I think that at times would stun him. And then he'd look back and then in the first game see Pepe and see a ridiculous red card that ultimately cost Portugal because of the 4-0 defeat. If they'd had 11 men, they might have been a lower scoreline. They might have got through. We might have been saved the whole USA is here and football. Seems to be every 4 years this happens. But I was just disappointed with Portugal from an attacking aspect. I mean, I did very much enjoy their second goal against USA. But they, against Ghana again, it's one of those, for me, neither team seemed to want to do enough to actually win it. No one wanted to push that bit more. I think, again, Portugal seemed, because they were built as Ronaldo and 10 others, they seemed to buy into it, as opposed to thinking, no, we're still a good team, we can still create something without passing it to him, without including him in a move, and it just added more pressure on him.
Yeah, Sahel, Germany looked good in patches in the group, but not, again, flying on all cylinders.
Yeah, there's a tactical problem with Germany in that they've got a midfielder which sort of rotates, and then they've got fullbacks who aren't fullbacks, so they've got centre backs in those positions. And then what happens is that all the play gets congested in the middle because the centre backs are afraid to actually go forward with the ball and put balls in, things like that. So I think sometimes Germany's football becomes a bit predictable, and I think we saw that, we saw bits of that in the groups. Touching up on Portugal, as Andrew said, that the team was built as Cristiano and 10 others. What doesn't help is that Ronaldo is probably injured, and it doesn't help the fact that they've got all this pressure on him to try and perform. You look at Argentina, for instance. Argentina is Messi and 10 others, if you realistically look at it, and he has performed. He looks fully fit and he looks motivated to actually be able to do it, while Portugal just look an absolute shambles. And Ghana were absolutely... It's surprising because they played really well against Germany, but as Andrew said, they looked absolutely poor against Portugal. They just didn't seem to want it enough. The story about the money is quite interesting, in that they actually flew the cash, the physical cash, by plane.
Yeah, that one was a bit out of left field.
Like wire transfer, nothing like that.
No.
Unless we want the physical dollars in our hands, thanks very much. I think they don't trust the authorities to that extent that they don't even want them to have their bank account.
Yeah, I mean, in sort of contrast to Sahel, I really enjoyed the USA at this World Cup. I thought they were fantastic fun. And I really enjoy the sort of over the top enthusiasm of their fans. And I think in the first game, the celebration by John Brooks after he'd scored the winner was still one of my favourite moments of the tournament, when it's just sort of almost couldn't compute that he'd scored the winner in a World Cup game. So I was quite pleased to see them through.
If you actually enjoyed watching the United States play, I think they had a similar style to how the Australians played. So it's a bit. I couldn't even watch that type of football, to be honest.
Well, moving on to the final group, and again, this was one that pretty much everybody expected Belgium and Russia to go through, and certainly, I mean, I asked the question on this podcast, are Algeria anything more than Sofiane Feghouli? And well, quite clearly they are.
Yeah, very impressed with Algeria. They had more to their game than I thought. I thought they would play a counter-attacking style, but I thought they passed the ball incredibly well and they created a lot of chances. Feghouli obviously was the big marquee player, but Islam Slimani up front was, I thought, fantastic. His movement and his ability to try and bring others into the game, I thought, was absolutely fantastic. I think they'll go out of this tournament with a lot of credit for the way that they play. There's obviously a lot of limitations within that team, but I thought Halli Hodžić just did well to actually changed the team slightly in certain games. He changed the base of the midfield in certain games in the way that he wanted the team to play. The way he used Karl Medjani was quite interesting, and it shows the flexibility that they have within their defence and midfield. It wasn't an excellent group in particular in terms of quality, but I think they were the brighter sparks. They showed bright sparks anyway, especially in the game against South Korea.
Yeah, I did enjoy the fact that I tweeted before that game that I expected it to be possibly the worst game of the World Cup, and it was one of the most entertaining. It was fantastic fun.
Yeah, they had the third goal was possibly the team goal of the tournament so far.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew, what did you make of the Belgians? You know, much vaunted before the tournament. Their performances maybe weren't brilliant throughout the group stage, but they came away with 9 points.
In the most boring fashion possible, in my opinion, the worst group of the lot.
Yeah.
I mean, as we said about Algeria, it was fantastic to see them do so well. I might well be given death threats for this, but I'm going to say that they seem to now have emerged from Egypt's shadow in world football.
Wow.
Egypt don't do it. Egypt don't do it at World Cups, but they do it in Africa. But I think that for Algeria to get out of this group was a really big thing. Russia, I mean, I put South Korea as second. I thought Russia were never going to get out of this group because you look at their squad and there really isn't that much talent there. Or it's in drips and drabs and there's no real fluidity to it. And when Capello then set them up, as he did exactly the same with England 4 years ago, you thought, well, this isn't going to work. And in all fairness, Algeria, I think they saw that coming. And I mean, South Korea were poor, which is, for me, was disappointing because I thought, again, they might have shown more. Although the weird thing was they put their best performance together, arguably, in the game we lost against Algeria. Even the Russia game draw was laboured from both, well, from both sides. But I think you can just say Russia's laboured full stop in this tournament. I praise the Belgians for getting total points, but for a team with that much talent, I mean, Lukaku, well, didn't show up in the group. I don't know who that was up front, but it didn't seem to me to be Romelu Lukaku. And Hazard didn't really do a lot. And Fellaini, in all fairness, at one point actually looked quite good, which was amazing after last season. But they, as I say, it was difficult for them to show a lot in this group, but I don't know. They were dull while doing it. And there's one crime I can't stand, that's being boring.
Well, we'll take a short musical break at this point, and after we come back, we will be discussing the knockout stages. Welcome back to the Love of the Left Foot podcast, and tomorrow evening, as we're recording, it's time for the quarterfinals, and the first of those, at 5 o'clock, which means I'm going to have to really rush to try and get out of work in time, is France versus Germany. Sahel, it could be a fantastic clash from two teams that are both very capable in an attacking sense.
Yeah, if you look at both midfields, they're stacked with talent, but they've got different types of skills in both of them. France are more physical. They're dominating. They've pretty much got up and down all game. Germany are slightly different. They're a bit more skillful on the ball. A slight discredit to France. But I think they'll do well with the ball retention and they'll pass it well. So I think that's where the big battle is between those two teams. It'd be very interesting to see. There's a clear clash in styles there from both sides. Joachim Löw is trying to do as much as he can to try and replicate what Guardiola is doing at Bayern Munich. And I think the style that France have currently is working for the players that they've got. And I think it'll be a real interesting watch between these two teams. I think this is possibly the quarterfinal tie that we've got. This is possibly the best one of the four anyway.
Yeah. And Andrew, neither looked hugely convincing in their second round wins. You know, France left it late to beat Nigeria and Germany needed extra time to knock out Algeria.
Yeah, I think the French, in all fairness to them, I think they, in their game, looked quite nervy. I think they realised, hang on, we could do quite well in this tournament. I think the Germans, you could almost go blame Guardiola for some of the limitations in this tournament. In terms of Philipp Lahm, whose best performances for Germany have always been as a fullback, and they put him in midfield. I mean, the thought of me for this game is Lahm versus Pogba. A tank versus an ant. I and especially, of course, the recent news story with the German sniffle virus hitting seven of their players. For me, against Algeria, they really missed Mats Hummels. Yeah. I missed him. But I think he was missed greatly in terms of the way he brings the ball out from defence and goes past Lahm. Lahm seems not to do everything, and because he's now been called this, complete footballer by Guardiola, maybe it's gone to his head a little. But I think in terms of looking back on the last 16 for them, you feel it might have given Germany that little jolt. But I don't know, for me, I've got France winning this, but
Yeah, I mean, that was what I was going to go on to. I mean, just a quick mention for myself on the Germany-Algeria game. I did enjoy Manuel Neuer giving the perfect performance as a sweeper-keeper and just legging it about all over the place. Thoroughly entertained me. But given how good we were at predictions in the group stage...
I went too bad.
we'll go through this and see. I'm going against you there, Andrew. I think Germany will just edge this one despite their defensive worries. Sahil, who do you see winning it?
I think it's probably going to extra time. I think France would probably just nick it.
Fair enough. So the official of the left foot verdict is that France go through. Later that evening, we have Brazil versus Colombia in, I think, what many people are calling the tie of the round. A Brazil side which isn't looking at its best against a Colombia side, Andrew, with certainly the star of the tournament, as we've mentioned, in James Rodriguez, and who look like they could pose a real threat.
Well, yeah, it looks to me like a proper... a hooping game, for want of a better phrase. I mean, in terms of quality of games, you've got the one half of the quarterfinals we're talking about now, and the other half is a big difference. With Brazil Colombia, it should be an excellent game to see how the Brazilians react to almost being beaten by Chile in the last 16. And Colombia, in the last games, they've almost been like the home team in terms of crowd backing. So this might be a little bit different for them. Made me interested to see how they react to that, but I am really looking forward to this game actually.
Yeah, Sahil, how do you see Colombia matching up against Brazil? Do they have the weapons to keep Brazil out at one end and score at the other?
I think what Brazil currently look like is a very ponderous midfield. Whilst the Colombians, they've got a certain switch in their midfield that they can certainly just pick the pace up very quickly. You don't see that really from the Brazilians. And we saw how Chile managed to really rattle them end of the first half, especially even in the second half. And I think that might be the big thing again here today. It was a bit, not today, but tomorrow. We'll see how quickly Colombia get the ball to Rodriguez and how Brazil, especially their defence, Luiz and Thiago Silva, come out and deal with him. Because Luiz is obviously known to be very rash when coming out of defence, and those kind of decisions may change the game really. Because you know, if you're going one on one with Rodriguez, he's got a bit of a trick in him, and he can open up spaces as well. And I think that's where the big threats are. Also, the wide areas, you've got Cuadrado coming up against Marcelo. That might be a bit of a mismatch, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Rodriguez certainly scored the goal of the tournament so far against Uruguay. I think I could watch a vine of that goal till the end of time.
Is it modern day your boy?
Absolutely. Well, moving on to the bottom half of the draw, on Saturday, the early evening game is Argentina against Belgium. And Andrew, I'm getting the sense that you're not particularly looking forward to this match.
I'm not particularly looking forward to either of the games really on Saturday, to be honest. Just a quick point with Brazil-Colombia. I just realised that Luis Gustavo is suspended for Brazil. That's huge.
Yeah. And I've just realised that we didn't make predictions. Mine for that game is... I think Colombia have everything to win it, but I think they'll shit the bed. And nerves will overtake them, and Brazil will go through. It may need extra time, but... And penalties, but I think Brazil will be going through to the semi-final. Andrew?
I'm going to go for... I really don't want to, but I'm going to go Brazil to win it on penalties. And they're going to be very, very lucky this game. I think there'll be some decisions that will go against Colombia, and Colombia will go out without cry. But in terms of, if you like, in a neutral atmosphere, I would be backing Colombia to win this game because of Luis Gustavo missing for Brazil. I think that's really, really important because James Rodriguez might be looking and going, oh, I can have some fun here. But as it isn't in that neutral environment, I do agree. I can see him just, unfortunately, just wilting and Brazil going through on penalties again.
Yeah, and Sahil?
Yeah, I think the lack of experience from Colombia might cost him, so I think Brazil might sneak it.
So, moving back to Argentina-Belgium, yeah, and Andrew, neither side has played fluently. It's not set up for an absolute barnstorming game.
No, neither team's really been exciting, and just it's a team, a game you look at on paper and think this could be good, and it it's a letdown. There's no other term to describe it. I would like to think some of the Argentine players, quite sort of before Higuain might prove me wrong and show that he's a decent centre forward, because he's really not showing it in this tournament so far for me, personally. I think Belgium really have to up their game significantly. They were against USA, you could maybe say fortunate, with that Wilmots has the quality from the bench, and that's what's got them through, has been that quality from the bench. Again, Lukaku seemed reborn after being benched, and Origi's been very, very good anyway. But it's, yeah, I would like this to be a good game. It on paper should be a good game. In reality, we might be getting some early sleep.
And Sahil, I mean, what are your thoughts on it? Will either of these sides kick into gear?
It's going to be billed as Messi versus Hazard, isn't it? So these are the two stellar names. They've both been built around these individual players, and I think that's where he's going to be. He's going to be stodgy. I think they're going to try and feed the ball to those players in particular as quick as possible, and I think that will make it a very disjointed game. There'll be no real set pattern of play in how they want to set up against each other. I think what Wilmots has as a problem is whether he starts with Origi or does he start with Lukaku, because as Andrew said rightly, he looked reborn against the United States, and Argentinian defence looks absolutely unsettled, and they can't deal with anything half physical, so dealing against Lukaku might be a real problem for them. So that might be something that Belgium may want to look at. But I think Wilmots went into real fighting talk saying that we know Argentina have a back five, and we know how to deal with them. They don't seem that strong. That's why they play a back five. So we'll see how that one goes.
Yeah, who in the end are you going to back to go through, Sahil?
I think it's Messi time again. I think he'll sneak another one in.
Andrew, do you think he's going to carry his nation up to the semi-finals?
Probably. It's to be billed as Messi versus Hazard, but we'll get Mascherano versus Fellaini. And it'll be drab. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I forgot about God. But, yeah, Argentina to win 1-0 in 90 minutes and to bore us. I'll probably get an early goal, and then we'll think it's set up for a great game. And, yeah, Mascherano, Gago, Fellaini, Witzel, kicking 7 bells of crap out of each other. Might have some enjoyable sides to it, but no, not for purists.
Yeah, I'm going to make it a roundhouse on this one. A dull game, but an Argentina win, which moves us on to our final quarter-final match, which is the Netherlands versus Costa Rica. Sahil, the Dutch have been brilliant against Spain. Nervous and you're not quite as impressive against Mexico, but they've got a great chance of getting to the semi-finals here.
Yeah, I think they've had the easiest route, I think, from all the other big teams in the tournament. They've not looked really impressive, despite the fact that they beat Spain by such a big margin. Their defence looks absolutely shocking at times. They're so open, considering this is a Van Gaal team, when he likes to set up defences based on how he set up Alkmaar, Barcelona, teams like that. So this is not going to be a real test, I think. This is two teams who played similar formations, but I think Netherlands' individual quality will be enough to make sure that they go through to the next round.
Yeah. And Andrew, do you see Costa Rica being able to prolong this incredible run? I mean, you know, they just squeaked past Greece, and I think everybody thanked them for that, but will they be able to down the Netherlands?
Well, they could. I mean, no one expects them to get this far. They didn't expect themselves, well, I don't know, maybe they did. That would be some serious delusion to start the tournament, but they've been proved right. I would love to think they would, but I just think, again, Holland, it's a big game experience thing. I mean, that proved a lot in the last 16, was the teams that had that big game experience edged it. And I think that'll probably be proved again with this one. I hope not. I would really like a shock in these quarterfinals, but I get one of those feelings again. It's going to be one of the, you know, it might be a game that will be rather close on scoreline, but not really in terms of the whole game. I would quite like Costa Rica to score early in this. If they do that, then we could have a very good game. I mean, in all fairness to Louis van Gaal, two words, Ron Vlaar. They've made Ron Vlaar look very good. That is quite an achievement.
It is. Ron Creatures.
Yeah.
Imagine what you could do with Phil Jones then.
I'm exactly the same. I think that it should be a fairly comfortable win for the Netherlands in terms of performance, if not in scoreline, which gives us a semi-final lineup of Brazil versus France and Netherlands versus Argentina. So four of the bigger nations, but getting through. But then some, like England, Spain and Germany, you would have to suggest will have been considered to have had pretty bad tournaments.
Well, England, it all depends on what you bill England as.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put them up there. I'd say Italy at a poor tournament, but in all fairness to them, they recognise that straight away. I mean, to see not only, I think a lot of people expected Prandelli to resign, but then I know the chairman was leaving anyway, but still to be so unanimous again, I'm so disappointed in this, I've got to go now, rather than in the month's time I was meant to. I was hoping England would follow suit with that. But, of course, good old FA disappointed me again. A lot of people will say with this tournament, oh, where was Cristiano Ronaldo? Where was Portugal? But I would look forward. Holland-Argentina would be a good semi-final in a different World Cup.
Fair enough. I have to say, I think Brazil, I'd love to see Colombia versus France because I think that could be a great game.
That would, yeah.
But I do think Brazil versus France would be a good game, an entertaining game to watch. Well, we're going to take another and a final little musical interlude, and when we come back, we'll be discussing the good and the bad. Welcome back to the third and final part of this Lovely Left Foot World Cup podcast. We're going to go through and be a bit mean about the players who haven't had good World Cups so far. Go through it sort of position by position. And Andrew, there's really one shining light of a goalkeeper to mention this part, isn't there?
He kept the one. Yeah, he seemed to have forgotten how to catch. Or parry.
Or kick.
Or, he pretty much forgot football, really. He was on holiday, mind, body and soul. It was bizarre. I thought I know Del Bosque is one of those managers that likes his favourites, but I thought after the first game, I'd have thought, you know what, I'm going to put Reina in. Or, it was so, man, so bad.
Yeah, I think, had De Gea been fit for the second game, he may well have made that decision. I think when you're looking at the bench and saying my other option is Pepe Reina, is that going to be any better?
Yeah, but the second game was against Australia.
Yeah, possibly.
And they conceded two goals to Australia. And without, I mean, a lot of people said, oh, it was a nice way Australia played. And, you know, at the end of the day, they finished pointless. Again, naivety was a big thing with them. But in terms of with Spain, I said, for me, with Casillas, was just that his thing before used to be his reactions, I always thought, his agility. I mean, agility obviously is something that goes away with age and reflexes. But then the position as you come in, he seems to have not taken that on board. I'm sure Mourinho would have been watching that and grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah, I mean, Sahel, I suppose not playing a lot of football for Real Madrid this season hasn't exactly helped him.
Absolutely. I think he lacked match practice. You saw that in the Champions League final where he flapped for the Coutinho. Yeah. And he seemed to have continued that. Even in the Chile game, he just punched to the ball. Was it to, I can't remember the Aaron Guise, was it, who scored the second.
Yeah.
He just looked absolutely poor for both games, and I think this probably is the right time for him to really end his Spanish career.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of other goalkeepers who've underperformed, I don't think Joe Hart was particularly good for England, but Igor Akinfeev at Russia had a bit of a bad time.
Some brilliant kangas.
Even if he is claiming or Capello's claiming on his behalf the laser in the Algeria game put him off.
I think he, in all fairness, Akinfeev's got a very good excuse in terms of being bored out of his mind or watching his teammates.
That's a very fair point. Moving on to defenders, for me, one of the worst performances I saw throughout the group stage was from Glenn Johnson for England, which isn't any sort of surprise. He's not a very good defender. He just was terrible. So he'd be one of my nominations for worst performing defenders. Sahail, do you have anybody who particularly stood out for you?
I thought Leighton Baines was really bad, surprisingly.
He certainly didn't live up to the reputation that he's supposed to have.
I actually blame Hodgson for Baines being that poor in terms of against England and Uruguay. They were always going to target our left-hand side. This might have always said Ashley Cole should have gone because he's better defensively. Baines goes forward and the person to help cover him is Wayne Rooney. It's not going to be great defensively, and that was shown. In all fairness, I totally agree, Glenn Johnson, a stinker.
Jackie Elka was the other one, I think.
Yeah, he was shocking. But in all fairness, you've got to mention Spain's centre-back, Sergio Ramos, who I can't stand, and it was great to see him be so terrible. And Piqué in the first game used to be a defender that could turn well, and he really didn't turn well at all. I would nominate them, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd go with Nkulo from Cameroon as well.
I was just about to mention, you know, he's a defender who I like a lot. You know, he's been, you know, had a good time at Marseille and he's got a lot of promise, but he was rubbish.
I think we could, in all fairness, I think in terms of worst in the tournament, we can mention anyone for Cameroon, really.
Treat them as a separate case. They were just Cameroon, they were just awful.
Yeah, I mean, if you, as a defender, turn back and you see Charles Itanche behind you, you're going to be worried anyway. I mean, I'm convinced that's why Alex Song got the, for me, the most, even more stupid than Pepe, red card.
That was.
Tournament. And then you get defenders in fighting because they realised we're that bad.
Yeah. moving on. To midfielders, Andrew, was there anybody who really stood out for you here as being quite poor? I mean, you've mentioned already that you didn't think Yaya Touré was good.
No, he was pretty terrible. But the worst midfielder of the tournament, and I'm smiling while saying this, was Steven Gerrard. England's centre midfield was non-existent.
Yeah.
Going forward or defensively, Henderson, I only saw him in the game when he was being substituted. And Gerrard, well, it just, for me, it was so much this really hasn't been a good past few months for you, Steve.
Yeah, put a lot of the blame on Hodgson for Baines' performance. I'm going to put a lot of the blame on Hodgson for Gerrard's performance because...
Liverpool fan.
Yes, I am a Liverpool fan, hello. But, you know, a lot of the reason for Liverpool playing in the diamond this season wasn't just to get Sturridge and Suarez playing up top together. It was to be able to do that whilst giving Gerrard a midfielder either side of him in a three. So you had Joe Allen or Coutinho and
basically give him a break.
Yeah, because we saw against Aston Villa when Liverpool were torn apart at Anfield. If you put Steven Gerrard in a midfield two, this is what happens. He can't do it.
No, he can't do it. And Jordan Henderson as well.
Jordan Henderson he can't do all his running and all Gerrard's running. You know, he needs somebody there to help him. And you know, had that been someone that, like, you know, even Barkley would have helped, you know, if he'd have been playing in a slightly deeper role or Wilshere. You know, if you're going to play Gerrard in that role, you have to play a midfield three. And I mean, you're quite right to point out he was appalling. But I think it was as much a failing of the system.
Yeah, I think only good. I mean, we could go on for quite a while in terms of the failings of England. And they said that what amazed me was the lack of England midfield at times. It didn't seem, when Rooney was there, it's like, oh, there's a midfield. And then he moved forward and it's like, there really wasn't. And it was just players going through. It was so disappointing that Hodgson seemed to live up to the long ball idea of you've got defenders, you've got forwards, there's people in the middle, just watch the ball fly over their head. And they seem to have built a system towards that, despite not having anyone up top that could hold the ball up.
All right, Sahil, were there any midfielders who really stank the place out for you?
Javi Alonso, I thought he did brilliantly well to show how rubbish he looked.
Can I just mention one midfielder I'm going to add? Because again, I'm going to say this good on my face. Andres Iniesta. He was at his passing best in the second game, where he'd dance around in circles and consider passing to players, and it would complete a pass for him. I'm convinced inside he's going, yes, complete a pass. Backwards. To Xavi Alonso. Yeah. It was... I never bought into the whole Iniesta love thing. Don't get me wrong, a very good player like Xavi. A very, very good player. This is... I think for Spain... this tournament really just, they didn't start until Australia.
Mm, yeah. I mean, Sahil, Alonso was absolutely stinking.
He was rubbish. He looked so old against the Chile midfield. Like everything was passing through him. It was just like, here's the defence, go and take them on, sort of thing. He didn't put a foot in, passing it all over the place. I think he got subbed in that game as well. I know he got taken off in the first game.
Yeah.
But he was absolutely poor. And he also considered his retirement as well. I think he's taken it back, surprising enough. The other one is Valencia from Manchester United. His poor World Cup got rewarded with a 4-year contract. He was pathetic all three games, and then he ended his World Cup with a sending off, which is not surprising.
I think after the magic that Van Gaal did with Vlaar, he saw Valencia and thought, hang on, I could make him look good, and gave him the foot. He was picked out as his little project, I think. That's what I would like to think, because that's the only reason you'd put him to a 4-year contract.
I mean, a honourable mention, I think, to a couple of players who have been already sort of singled out. Raul Morales was horrible for Portugal. Alex Song was dreadful for Cameroon, but topped it off and won me over to being a fan of him with a ridiculous red card.
That was a truly great red card. It's one of those moments you think, yeah, go on.
It was fantastic. But, I mean, moving on to strikers, for me, the biggest disappointment in the tournament was Edin Dzeko.
Oh no, Diego Costa has to be.
Okay, yeah, the second biggest disappointment in the tournament for me was Edin Dzeko. But you're absolutely right, Sahil. Diego Costa was rubbish and just didn't fit into the system at all.
He looked slow. I think Ronaldo looked injured more than anything. But you know, you kept making runs off the ball. A lot of like, this is what clutching at straws means, but he was making runs in the first game against the Netherlands and they weren't passing the ball to him. And then he got the penalty. And then he just looked absolutely rubbish after that. And then I think Del Bosque thought, okay, you're rubbish, I'm going to bring on Torres. and Torres went on to miss an open goal.
That's ranked highly, again, Liverpool fan, hello, as being one of my favourite moments of the tournament.
In terms of Spain have had so much success arguably without a forward, and they seemed convinced in this tournament, we're going to show we can play with a centre forward that's done well. And Diego Costa felt like going, I'm in Brazil now, I'm Brazilian again. And I think that must have got him in some way. He must have realised that he actually is Brazilian and has no affinity to Spain other than living there.
He did his best Fred impression, I suppose.
Yeah, he did. I mean, Fred's been disappointing.
Yeah.
You could put him in there. In terms of with Dzeko, I think it's a little bit harsh in terms of there wasn't... While Bosnia's midfield is quite decent. I mean, Pjanic, I thought, looked really good. And I did feel sorry for him. So again, he's one of those players like Ricardo Rodriguez, deserved a better support. But Dzeko, I think he'd be a bit harsher.
I think I expected so much more of him.
I mean, I would say any Portuguese strikers, they never replaced Paulista or Nuno Gomes. Hugo, when I saw the squads and saw Hugo Almeida there, I kind of thought, really? What happened to Nelson Oliveira, the new hope? I know he's been loaned out several places. But, you know, I'd say Portugal's lack of a centre-forward is probably the worst centre-forward of the whole tournament.
The Higuain's been rubbish as well.
He's been thoroughly rubbish. Just to finish off, I'm going to ask each of you to name your favourite moment of the tournament. And I've been sort of dancing around a few throughout this, but I'll start off, and I'd say Alan Guiz's penalty in the shootout between Chile and Brazil, where he just absolutely leathered it, and it was a penalty so ferocious that it actually made Julio Cesar flinch as it went past him, and just thank the Lord that it didn't hit him in the face.
That would have been quite incredible if it had hit him, just to have seen what would have happened if he would have gone back with the ball, or if it just, you know, if we'd be talking about, you know, Daily Departed Julio Cesar.
Yeah, but I think for me, that is now the penalty by which all other penalties will be judged. So that's my favourite moment at the tournament. Sahail, what have you going for?
Suarez's second goal against England. It's just absolutely brilliant.
You're going to get some hate mail for that.
Gerard, that's quite a history of putting him through for lovely goals.
Yeah, there's that. And it was just the abject defending. And then it was like, I'm going to take this. And he just absolutely leathered it into the net past Mr. Head and Shoulders. And
Doritos. And we know, Joe Hart. And all I can say, his agent must be loving him right now.
Well, Andrew, what's been your favourite moment so far?
Mine is, well, when I say it, it's going to be quite predictable. It involves Greece and Ivory Coast and me being right. I was toying with Alex Song's red card just for, as I said, I wanted there to be, in this World Cup, a massive punch-up. That was the nearest we got, was Cameroon 1, Bemo Asuricato's little fight. I can't remember which teammate it was that he tried to hit. That was quite funny. But no, I've got to go with Greece proving me right. And they're both the satisfaction at being right and the sheer disgust at being right at the same time was a hell of an emotion. So for me, Greece, Ivory Coast.
Excellent. Well, that brings to an end this show. We'll be back again before the end of the tournament. So until then, it's goodbye.